Live and local, this is a Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll learn about upcoming events at the Canvas. Pat McClure will be here to highlight the Family Promise Program. Brandon Howard from Amalga Distillery will talk about First Friday activities. And Kelsey Johnston from the Alaskan Brewing Company will discuss what's happening at the Depot. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Weather today, scattered rain showers, lows around 50.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's investigation into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls is officially underway. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the first hearings began Tuesday in the northern Yukon community of Whitehorse.
About 40 people, friends and families of the victims, are scheduled to speak over the 3 days of hearings in Whitehorse. They will share their stories of victims and talk about the long-term pain they've suffered. The Native Women's Association of Canada has compiled files on 582 cases of missing or murdered Native women and girls. Unofficially, some say the numbers could be double that over the past 30 to 40 years. Marion Buller is the chief commissioner. She says today is a turning point for Canada, and the hearings are a sorrowful but essential part of the country's history.
I expect that in this hearing and in hearings to follow, we will hear about mothers, grandmothers, sisters and aunties, nieces, cousins, and dear friends. They are and were real people who loved and were loved, who dreamed and hoped, who laughed and cried.
Buller also says all Canadians need to hear the truth and get a better understanding of the systemic violence endured by the Indigenous community in Canada for generations. The hearings in Whitehorse wrap up tomorrow. They will resume in other communities across Canada in the fall. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Law enforcement on Tuesday announced they've arrested a 31-year-old man in connection with a deadly hit-and-run over the weekend in Washington State, which left a Native American man dead and another injured. The Seattle Times reports the Grays Harbor County Sheriff's Office says so far there's no evidence to indicate race was a factor. But the Quinault Nation believes the incident may be a hate crime, pointing to a witness statement indicating racial slurs were shouted at the two men who are tribal members. They were camping with a group of friends when a pickup truck reportedly started spinning around at the camp as the campers yelled at the driver to stop. According to deputies, the truck backed over 20-year-old Jimmy Kramer, who died from the incident, and 19-year-old Harvey Anderson, who was injured. Over the weekend, the tribe asked witnesses to come forward and aid in the search and provide information as police looked for a white male driving a mid-1990s Chevy. The suspect has been booked in jail for second-degree homicide. Dakota elders met in Minneapolis, Minnesota Tuesday to discuss how to respond to a scaffold installation, which had originally been set to open this weekend at the Walker Art Center. It's been postponed after outcry from the Native community calling the piece insensitive due to the history of the mass hanging of 38 Dakota people. The Art Center pushed back the opening in order to meet with Dakota elders. That meeting scheduled for 3 hours Wednesday with Art Center and city staff and the artists. Artist Sam Durant, in a statement Saturday, described the work as a display of difficult histories of the criminal justice system in the United States and says it was not intended to cause pain or suffering. He goes on to say he should have reached out to the Dakota community. A decision on the piece is expected to be made public following the meeting with elders. Autopsies released this week show two Navajo sisters and their children died in January of hypothermia. Vanessa and Leticia George and their three children were found dead in a vehicle on Santa Ana Pueblo land in New Mexico. Family members were concerned about the sisters and called police to search for them. The FBI found no evidence of foul play. Cold weather hit the state when the sisters went missing. U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke met with a group of Native leaders in Alaska Tuesday. The leaders wanted to discuss their priorities with the secretary. Earlier in May, Alaska Federation of Natives President Julie Kitka responded to President Trump's time in office by saying the AFN was looking at ways to negotiate with the administration and was closely watching land and water issues. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Not aid support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at fiabq.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Here with me are my first guests, Glow, Toby, and Alex from Canvas. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so you're here to talk about the Canvas and some other stuff as well. Let's start off with Glow. Why don't you just, for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about the Canvas and what you do.
The Canvas works under the umbrella of REACH, so we serve people with all type of abilities to develop their artistic sense. So we serve not only the individuals, just community in general. So we provide classes, different classes, and activities during the year for everyone.
Like art classes, right?
Yeah, art classes. Yeah. We got a gallery that change monthly. And we get merchandises with the individual's art. So we get a little bit of everything going on all the time.
Cool. I took an oil painting class at Canvas last year.
It was awesome.
Okay. So, Glow, all three of you, I'd just like to know, what's your connection with Canvas?
So, and on my case, I am the program assistant. I'm the one that you will see on the front desk and will greet you. Alex is the studio manager on the pottery studio, and Toby is one of our artist assistants.
So I'm in the studio, kind of facilitating people coming in and making artwork and helping out where needed. And Alex does the same thing in the pottery studio, but he also manages.
Yeah, just kind of keeping the ceramic studio, which is just sort of a separate entity of the rest of the studio, keeping clay away from paint and anything else. But just making sure that the studio is clean and like a good environment to work in mud and make art.
Oh, that sounds like great jobs.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
So what brings you here today to talk about, you have an upcoming show, yeah?
Yeah. So we have an upcoming show. It's called Reclaimed. And it's the three of us and then Grace Corrigan, who also works at the Canvas. And Glow is the mastermind behind this. She kind of talked us all into trying to do a staff show. So we've got the four of us that are producing work and showing it this Friday.
Oh, that's really exciting. Yeah. I bet the staff is excited to show off their own talents.
Yes, we are. It was more of like a New Year's resolution that we needed something to do during this year related to arts. And it came that idea of using recycled materials or donated materials so we could show not only that the people that we serve, we are talented artists that are providing them our knowledge, but the fact that that we do enjoy being there and that we can gather any type of materials to make it art-worthy and gallery-worthy.
Have the students been supportive?
Yes, everyone has been really great with us.
Yep. I have a portrait. One of my pieces is a portrait of one of the artists, and I showed it to her, and she recognized it. So I was pretty happy about that.
She knew who was in the portrait.
Yeah,
always
yeah,
a good sign.
Cool.
So there are a number of classes available for people at the Canvas. Is that right? You guys have some summer classes going on?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of programming coming up this summer. Primarily what we're targeting are children. You know, it's summertime, so kids are out of school, so we're just trying to fill their time. So we've got, at least in the ceramic studio, we've got some classes teaching wheel throwing, beginning wheel throwing, and a few hand-building classes, as well as some stuff that Brian O'Sullivan's doing. So they're like little ornament, porcelain ornament classes, building little, I don't know what else.
Yeah, he's got like hand-built animals. He got portrait drawings. We got Luis Gonzalez doing hand-built birdhouses or fairy houses. We got a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. photography, camping. We got some classes for the adults, too. It's just like one-day workshops because we know that sometimes their day is too pretty to just stay inside the studio. So it's better to have just like one-day class that they can enjoy, take out the work that they do, and, you know, just learn something new for their portfolios. Mm-hmm. We got a little bit of everything for everyone.
And Glow and I are helping two of the Canvas artists are teaching classes. So she's helping Niall Johnson teach class, and then I'm helping Marianne James teach a porcelain jewelry making class. So pretty excited about that. That's her second year doing it. So they're almost filled up, so sign up now.
Yeah. One more space from those classes.
And on that note, where do we sign up?
Canvasarts.org, or you can call the phone number
907-586-1750.
Toby's got on it. Yes. Okay, great. Well, anything else you guys would like to mention?
The opening of the show is this Friday, 4:30 to 7, and just be there. It's like a great collection of our individual styles, and it's a pretty good one. It's not because we are in the show, but there is a little bit for everyone. If you like mm-hmm. portraits, abstract, ceramics, there is a little bit for everyone.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a lot of artists supporting artists in this town, so I think there's nothing wrong with tooting your own horn. I really look forward to seeing it. I always try to stop by Canvas on First Friday. So thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much.
And good luck with the show.
Appreciate it. It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. Teachers that taught me weren't cool. They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. I have to admit, it's getting better. It's a little better all the time.
If you don't like going to the dentist, it's probably because it was a bad experience for you as a child. Times have changed. The board-certified pediatric dentist at the new Search Children's Dental Clinic will explain things in a way your child understands and provide fun distractions. Kids will actually want to go to the dentist and want to take care of their teeth throughout their lives. The new Children's Dental Clinic at Search is proud to offer pediatric dental services to all Juno's kids. To make an appointment for your child, call 789-KIDS. Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
It is 15 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juneau afternoon. My next guest is Pat McClear, here to talk about Family Promise of Juneau. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
Since it means different things to different people, I'd like to ask, how do you define the word family?
Family Promise of Juneau is an interfaith hospitality network, and family is defined by children first. So it's children and their families, which it makes it rather unique in regards to the Glory Hole or homeless, the Homeless First program. This is it's defined by children, so whichever adults come in with the kids, then that's family.
I see. And would you tell us a little bit more about Family Promise in Juneau? What's its role here in the community?
Well, sadly, there are lots of families that are experiencing homelessness in our fair city. The St. Vincent de Paul has quite a long waiting list, close to 100, and the school district is also aware of lots of students. And when I say lots, I'm talking close to 100, possibly over 100 students who are couch surfing, are living in cars, going from family member to family member. So this is the population that we are reaching out to, is the children, the invisible homeless population. Not invisible to their teachers.
No, certainly not. Yeah. So you're here today to talk about an event, a dinner and a fundraiser.
Correct.
Would you say more about that, please?
Oh, certainly. Thank you. We are having a Halibut Cataganti fundraiser on June 8th, which is a week from tomorrow on Thursday.
Sorry, what's Cataganti?
Well, see, in my house we refer to it as fat halibut because it is cooked with butter, mayonnaise, sour cream.
Okay.
Yeah. So there'll be sides of baked beans and some coleslaw. Dessert, however, you'll have to bid for because we'll have a silent auction for both desserts and then we'll have items up for silent auction also. So it'll be from 4 to 6 p.m. and it'll be at St. Anne's Parish Hall, which is up on 5th Street next to the Cathedral of the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary.
And who does this fundraiser benefit?
It goes directly to Family Promise of Juneau. We are a nonprofit agency, and it's part of our obligation as a board to go out there and beat the drum and bring in some money. So this is an effort that we're putting forth. And I know for myself and a gazillion other people in Juneau, family and friends are coming to visit.
Yes.
So after you're running around town all day long and you look at your clock and say, I'm hungry, what are we going to do? And say, $10. That's nothing. Let's go up to St. Anne's Parish Hall and get ourselves a decent meal, and the money goes to a great cause.
It is a great cause, and $10 is not that much for a halibut dinner.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, then there's the dessert.
Yes.
That's what you're really going to spring for, right? Are there any other organizations involved in this event?
Well, as I mentioned, we are an interfaith hospitality. So there are many faith communities in town which contribute to the success of this program. So Chapel by the Lake, the Northern Light United Church, Shepherd of the Valley, Holy Trinity, the Salvation Army, Church of the Nazarene, Church of Christ, St. Paul's, Cathedral of the Nativity, Resurrection Lutheran, and then there are supporting congregations. Those are all hosting congregations. That's where the families sleep from one week to the next. And the supporting congregations are the My Home Fellowship, the Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, the Congregation Sukkot Shalom, Eagle Wings Community Church, three wards of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Auk Bay, Mount Juneau, and Nugget Falls wards, Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 2, and members of the Baha'i community are all
That's
contributing.
Quite a list.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
Wow. Well, shout out to all those organizations for supporting this cause and this organization.
It goes from, quite frankly, some very conservative to some very liberal, and we're all in this many hands light work. We're all in this doing it together.
What a great example of unity.
Yes. It's a great coalition, and I'm very proud to serve with it.
Well, fantastic. Just for fun, what's the best thing you ever won at a silent auction?
Last year, we bid on a trip to Atlin. There's a retired teacher in town, and she has a summer place in Atlin. And she has a back room to her little cottage there. And we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into, and it was the best. It was such a wonderful, wonderful thing. So it was like bidding on it with your eyes closed because you had no idea what you were going to end up doing. And the hospitality was wonderful. The weather was great. We had a lovely, lovely time.
Oh, it sounds like quite an adventure.
It was.
That is good. That's a good one.
Yes.
All right. Well, anything else you'd like to mention about the event? Or where we can find more information?
Certainly, there's a Facebook page, Family Promise Juno, and there's also a web page, familypromisejuno.org. And if you can't attend but you would like to help out, there are lots of opportunities. So, and if you are not a member of a congregation name that I just read, it doesn't mean that you can't assist. I have friends who are not associated with any of the above, but they've stepped up and said, how can I help? And certainly we have a day center out by the chapel by the lake, and volunteers are welcome there. We have a van to transport our family guests from one location to the other, and van drivers are needed. And we have when people host in their congregations, we need folks to cook and share time with the family. So there's lots of opportunities to pitch in.
Wonderful. So that, again, is Thursday, June 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall. And it's a fundraiser for Family Promise of Juno. Suggested donation, $10.
It's a bargain. Am I right?
It's a bargain.
It's a bargain. So bring your friends.
Like you, we keep going much longer.
Bring your friends. Bring your family. Come on uptown.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being here, Pat.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2017. It's the birthday of Walt Whitman, born in West Hills, Long Island, New York, 1819. Worked as a typesetter in a print shop. He was a teacher, a journalist, newspaper editor. Worked as a carpenter, which was his father's trade. And he was living with his mother in Brooklyn when he read an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Poet, which said the new United States needed a poet to capture its spirit. And the young Whitman decided he was that poet. He later said, I was simmering, simmering, simmering. Emerson brought me to a boil. He began work on his collection, Leaves of Grass, writing an American epic celebrating the common man, did most of the typesetting for the book himself, made sure the edition would fit in a pocket, paid for the publication of 795 copies out of his own pocket. He was 37 years old. At the beginning, Whitman was criticized for being openly erotic. One reviewer called the book a mass of stupid filth. He kept expanding Leaves of Grass. 146 poems were added for the third edition. Thoreau did not care for his poetry, neither did Willa Cather. She referred to Whitman as that dirty old man. But Ralph Waldo Emerson praised him as the most extraordinary piece of wit and wisdom America has yet contributed. Walt Whitman left New York, when his brother was wounded in the Civil War, he walked all the way to Virginia and to Washington, D.C., to serve as a volunteer hospital nurse. And though he was unconventional in his manners and his clothing, Whitman found work as a clerk in the Department of the Interior, until one of the brass discovered that he was the man who had written Leaves of Grass, and he was fired. But a friend of Whitman's arranged for him to be transferred to the Attorney General's office, and the friend wrote a pamphlet entitled The Good Gray Poet, which praised Whitman's nobleness of character. And the pamphlet helped to change the average reader's perception of Walt Whitman. Instead of a bawdy nonconformist, he became the good gray poet, the wise old man. He spent the last 20 years of his life revising, expanding Leaves of Grass. The eighth and final edition came out in 1891. Whitman said it was at last complete after 33 years of hackling at it, all times and moods of my life, fair weather and foul, all parts of the land, and peace and war, young and old. Today, most scholars agree that Whitman probably was gay, though when he was asked directly toward the end of his life, he declined to answer. Walt Whitman, who said, "I cock my hat as I please, indoors and out." Born on this day on Long Island in 1819. Here's a poem by Philip Booth, Night Song. Beside you, lying down at dark, my waking fits your sleep. Your turning flares the slow-banked fire between our mingled feet, and there, curved close and warm against the nape of love, held there, who holds your dreaming shape, I match my breathing to your breath, and sightless keep my hand on your heart's breast, keep night watch on your sleep to prove there is no dark nor death. A poem by Philip Booth, Night Song, from Lifelines, published by Viking Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Progressive Insurance, comparing car insurance rates from multiple insurers so shoppers can evaluate options in one place. Now that's Progressive. Comparisons available at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hi, I'm Beth Riva.
And I'm Susie Cohen. We were host parents for Muslim exchange students.
I hosted Yara from Palestine.
And I hosted Basil from Turkey through the U.S. State Department-funded Yes Exchange program,
which brings high school students like Yara and Basil to America to build bridges between their culture and ours.
And foster ambassadors for peace.
To spend next school year building a friendship with a Muslim exchange student and learn more about the YES program,
contact Juno People for Peace and Justice at 789-9229 and yesprograms.org.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. With me is my next guest, Jenny Fremlin from AK Litho. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you.
And Jenny, you told me that your title is Social Media Goddess at Alaska Litho. Is that correct?
Sure, that'll work.
What is your favorite social media platform?
Oh, it has to be Instagram right now.
Instagram? Why Instagram?
Well, it's, as far as mostly what I do is help small businesses use social media, and Instagram is one of the places right now that you can still get a following and get your message out there without a big ad budget. And it's also pretty because it's so photography-focused.
It is. It's all pretty pictures.
Yep.
It is. You're right. That's a good one. I've been doing a lot of Google Plus.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right, so you're here to talk about a workshop that Alaska Litho is putting on next week.
Right.
And it's called Social Media for Small Business. Could you say more about it, please?
Sure. We do social media workshops for different groups. So last month we did one for travel and tourism, and next week we're doing this one for small businesses. And the idea is to get a group of people together who are sort of in the same boat with social media, and we do the workshop so you can do hands-on activities and figure out how to plan your social media, what platform is best for you, share ideas with each other, talk about sort of the nuts and bolts of it, what certain things are, what hashtags are, how to use ads on Facebook to target your specific audience. So that is open to the public. Anyone can register for this. And like I was saying to you earlier, we also do private team trainings and things like that throughout the year. So this is just a little bit different where it's open to the public.
Great. Can you give an example of, like a tip or a preview of a piece of advice you'd give someone who is working on their social media in a small business?
Yeah, one of the things I'm going to be sharing is a report from 2016 and which platforms work best with which industries. And so it's not really one platform fits all, and that's part of what we'll do is talk about each person's business and where they might reach the audience they're looking for. But one of the activities we'll do is writing your social media goals and then tying those directly to your business goals so that you can measure if you're succeeding or not, which is one of the hardest things to figure out with social media.
That's true, the analytics of it all.
Yeah.
Right? That's great. That sounds like really useful information. So who are you hoping will come to this workshop?
Well, we're already about half full.
Great.
And so there aren't a whole lot of seats left, but I like to have variety across different industries. And so I think that is one of the best things is to get a bunch of people from Juno in there talking about how we have succeeded and how we have failed and working together on projects and even promoting each other. So you can build connections with other businesses in the workshop, too.
I would assume that Alaska Litho has a social media
presence.
Web presence, yes.
We do.
Where can we find out more? Where can we follow
We are
you?
On Facebook, and this workshop is listed as an event on Facebook, too, if you want to find more information there, and it has a link to buy tickets. And we're also on Instagram. We're on Pinterest. We have all the links at the top of our website, aklitho.com.
Twitter?
We're not on Twitter.
No? Google
no.
Plus?
We are on Google Plus.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, yay. Someone I can follow. Cool. Well, the details again, it's June 7th and 11th it will, in the morning. It will be downtown. $75 registration. What else can we tell them about this event, this workshop?
Those are the details of when and where it is, and we always have coffee and some light snacks because it's early in the morning and have that to get you going. And then if there's a specific question you're interested in, you can also email me through the website and ask me questions either separate from the workshop or about the workshop. So I'm taking input on what should be covered in the workshop, too.
Great. That all sounds really cool. Are you looking forward to it?
I am. It's a lot of fun.
And you yourself will be leading the workshop?
Yes.
Or participating in leading?
I'm leading the workshop. Yeah.
Okay. Any other organizations or agencies involved in it?
No, this is just Alaska Litho.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks again, Jenny Fremlin, for being here. And good luck with the workshop.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will come. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wandering where it will.
This is a Juno afternoon. It's about 25 minutes to the top of the hour, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Here with me are my next guests, Andy Klein and Blake Haas from the Alaskan Brewing Company. Welcome, Shelley, gentlemen.
How you doing?
Hi, good, good. All recovered from Brewfest?
No.
Me either.
That's not
me
the
either.
Point.
Good times, good times. All right, so what's your favorite beer, you guys?
Our favorite beer?
Yeah.
My favorite beer that we make, I guess, I always go back to Icy Bay IPA. I think it's a really smooth, drinkable, bright, refreshing IPA. So it's kind of the one that I end up buying myself most, but I really love Big Mountain, too. It's our new pale ale.
I like Big Mountain as well.
I gotta go think? Smoked Porter. I think it's a weird one.
He's a connoisseur.
That's the thing.
It's super complex, but like you get all the little nuanced flavors in there, and it's a beautiful beer.
Smoked seaweed, or what was that one called?
Sea smoke. That was Blake's beer that he brewed.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You loved it?
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah. A lot of people said they could only take a little, but I was drinking
it by the pint. So what was the secret? What went into that beer?
Well, into that beer, it was inspired by single malt scotch in there. So there was some peated malt, there was some alder smoked malt, some honey, heather tips, and then the kicker was the seaweed in there. Kind of that nice little briny quality, reminds you of the beach.
Yeah.
I think that was the most interesting beer, the most unique, one-of-a-kind beer that I ever tasted.
You know what? That's an interesting transition to the event we're going to talk about, because we actually took some of that sea smoke and it's not out yet. It won't be out for a while, but we are barrel aging some of that in a single malt scotch barrel from a very famous distillery in Islay.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Islay?
Yeah. In Scotland. So stay tuned for that. But that's part of our barrel aging program that we've just started up that we call our Treadwell Series Barrel Aged Beers program.
Whoa.
And it's so cool because it just so happens that this is also the 100th anniversary of the Treadwell mine closure, which is being celebrated as part of Douglas Days.
Interesting.
So we worked with the people who are doing Douglas Days, and we're this Saturday doing a tribute to the Treadwell mine and to Douglas Days by releasing three different Treadwell barrel age series that we're going to be serving up for free. For little samples all day long out of the brewery.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So Treadwell Days, huh? This is part of that. I was just on the trail over there by Sandy Beach and reading all the plaques, brushing up on my history.
Right.
Good timing. Good job, me.
Yeah, they're way to go. I know, it's so wild. Like, there are swimming pools, and there's, the largest dining hall on the
baseball
West Coast.
Field
and
or something.
All this stuff, and it was all above on pilings. You know, it's just crazy. Like, the city on pilings. It's like Atlantic City was built all the way down Douglas, down Sandy Beach. It's quite cool.
I wonder why it
collapsed. It collapsed. That's why. You know why. Nothing
right.
good lasts.
I know.
But I thought, so we brought a little bit. You want to, should we try a little of this?
Yeah, let's try it. Tell me again what the beer is called.
So this is our bourbon barrel aged oatmeal stout. So the oatmeal stout everyone's grown to love. Has been aged in some bourbon barrels for quite a few months.
It went to the barrel program, now barrel
this,
aging program.
Now, isn't this an imperial version of the smoked stout?
It is, yeah.
Or not smoked stout, sorry.
This is the oatmeal.
Imperial version of the oatmeal stout.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So it's not it's a little bit higher ABV, a little higher alcohol going into the barrel. And then when stuff's barrel aged, it typically picks up a few percentage points of alcohol as well as things distill out, as things evaporate out, the alcohol level kind of comes up a little bit. So, and then what happens, we put it in, this is in the Bull Run bourbon barrel. So Bull Run's a small.
It smells like bourbon.
Doesn't it smell like bourbon? Yeah.
Very
it's a small
strong.
Distillery in Portland. And we have a brewer that knows the guys and who are down there, so we got some of their barrels. So we've been using that on a couple of different beers. We did an imperial version of the amber, which we're also going to be serving on Saturday, and that's really interesting because how many ambers have we all had, in the years that we've been in Juneau? So you get really used to what an amber is, and then to have this whole new sensation around amber is really fun. So that's really cool as well. And then we got a third beer. We're not quite sure which one we're going to do. We're playing.
Surprise
beer. We're playing with this one surprise beer that we kind of aren't ready to announce yet. It might be ready on Friday. We're not sure. And then we also have our Imperial Smoke Porter, which Smoke Porter is, as Blake was saying, great beer. People love it. It's an award-winning beer. And that's a really interesting thing to get that bourbon characteristic in that as well.
What makes a beer an imperial beer? Just asking for a friend. I totally know. But
Just more alcohol in there. So, yeah, you're just going to use more of the malt in the recipe to bump up the alcohol. It's pretty hard to barrel age your beer and not make it imperial because you're going to get what they call the double share of that alcohol into the beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why you're tasting cool. bourbon, because there's actually bourbon in there.
Yeah. My favorite kind of beer, bourbon-flavored beer.
And a lot of that has to do Imperials typically have a higher original gravity, right? So right. So Blake's an actual home brewer. I'm not. I just talk about beer, but that's just the beer talking. That's what I always say. But
good line,
but,
Andy.
But Blake's an actual home brewer and has done some really great beer. So explain, that's one thing people always want to know. What's original gravity mean?
So gravity, that's what's going to help distinguish what your alcohol is. So what makes alcohol in beer is the sugar, the yeast eating those sugars. So your gravity is a measure of the density of those sugars within that liquid. So if you have a high original gravity, that means you have a lot of sugar in there, which means, in turn, you're going to ferment a lot of alcohol out from that sugar.
Because that's what the yeast are eating to make alcohol. Exactly. And carbon dioxide. They eat yeast. Yeast eat sugar. That's the big thing you're doing. So the higher the OG, the higher the alcohol. Although it can sort of, it can also just mean the sweeter the beer or the thicker the body of the beer.
Don't have to let it fully ferment. So it can just mean it could be a sweeter beer. So you got to have the original gravity and the final gravity to really have the whole picture.
Yeah.
You guys are scientists.
I know. There's
beer,
a lot of
you went to beer college.
There's a lot of science that goes into beer. It's kind of cool. Like there's a science and an art behind what beer is, you know? It's the scientific process that you have to have really tight controls on in order to make sure that it comes out the way you want it to. But there's also this whole artistic expression behind how you do every beer, and it can be, and you can alter something very slightly and it can express itself in a whole different way. So that's a really cool thing about the barrel age process, because the barrel aging brings in this element that's actually pretty hard to control. It's kind of a wild card. You throw it in the barrel and you kind of don't know what you're going to get out of it. And you have to wait for months and you have to test it every couple of months, you know, and see what you got. And that's why we've got this fourth beer that we were pretty sure was going to be ready for this tasting that we're doing on Saturday. But we're not sure. It may not be quite ready. So that's kind of what's going on. But that's sort of like, hey, that's art. You know?
that's art.
Yeah, right.
I like that.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you're just joining us, I'm here with Andy Klein and Blake Haas from Alaskan Brewing Company, and they're talking about the beers that they're going to be sampling in honor of Treadwell Days. And that's this weekend. Yeah,
it's happening Saturday. Start for all the hours that we're open, so 11 to 7 out at the brewery at the tasting room there. And just come in, and you have to say Treadwell Series or Douglas Days. And then that turns the key that unlocks the free small little samples of each one of these beers.
Word.
And then also we'll have the beers, if people want to take some home, we've got small size growlers that we use for the Barrel Age series.
Okay.
And people can buy a growler if they want to buy a growler or two, so they can take it home and enjoy it and all that kind of stuff too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And the beers will be this bourbon barrel stout?
We've got three different bourbon barrel aged beers. We actually just got in some rum barrels. Nothing is aged in them quite yet. Stay tuned next few months. You might hear more about that. But these are these bourbon barrels that we got from Bull Run Distillery out of Portland. And so we have our Imperial Smoke Porter. We have an Imperial Oatmeal Stout. An Imperial Amber, and then we also have another mystery beer that may or may not be ready. We're hoping it's ready, but we're not quite ready to announce it yet.
Yeah. So this oatmeal stout is delicious,
and
I highly recommend everybody go and take
some. So what are you getting?
Hint of French fries.
French fries. I don't get the French fries.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not
coleslaw.
A very good. I'm not a very good
vanilla.
Connoisseur. So
what do you think about vanilla? Do you
get
vanilla?
Yeah, definitely
okay.
Some vanilla.
I mean bourbon. I mean,
the
first of all, it
is
tastes
very
like bourbon.
Strong.
Right.
And is it supposed to be served at kind of a? It's not ice cold, and I feel like that's kind of.
You can serve it even warmer than this. This is pretty cold to serve it. You know, these bigger beers, especially ones that are barrel-aged, the warmer they get, the more they breathe, just like bourbon or just like a wine, like a red wine. So you want to allow those kind of aromas and flavors to open up a little bit. So it's nice to serve it a little bit warmer, which isn't typical for most beers. You know,
right.
Most beers you want, you know, pretty cold. But and then the warmer a beer, the less you can hide. You know, the colder a beer is, the more it numbs your taste buds. So an ice cold beer will always taste great, really.
Right. But right. A warmer. You want to keep the cheap stuff cold.
Yeah, that's right.
Stuff, though.
That's right. The good stuff you can warm up a little. You can allow it to be more closer to room temperature, and it can really breathe and taste great, and you know, lets those alcohols release and all the different kind of these aromas, these esters and phenols and all these stuff that kind of come out of the aroma of the beer. It really makes it an enjoyable to taste these more complex beers that way.
Yeah, it's kind of got a sweet, almost like a little. You know, yeah. It's a little thicker. I guess that's kind of the characteristic of the stout.
What I like about this one is after your palate's kind of rationalized that bourbon flavor on there, at the very back of your palate, you start to get quite a bit of wood, which is really nice that you can taste the barrel that it was sitting in for so long.
Yeah, that's true. You really get that oak.
Yeah.
I would
you?
Agree with that. I think that's what I was having trouble identifying, but that's coming out as well.
Yeah. Sometimes in you'll get stuff that's barrel aged, and you'll almost get a popsicle stick flavor at the end, you know? And that's, I would say, not as desirable. You want something that's oaky, got a little bit of that kind of character vanilla oak, but not that kind of really rough oak flavor. But that's kind of the fun thing when you start taking these beers and then treating them in these additional processes. There's a lot more to unwrap out of the flavor of them. There's a lot more fun to have is tasting them, and everyone's palate can pick up something slightly different. So that's really part of the fun of tasting great beers and complex beers. Pretty fun to do that.
My favorite part of barrel aging beers, we all know the four ingredients in beer, but then when you start barrel aging.
Do you know the four ingredients in beer?
Hops, yeast, barley?
Sure, yeah. Malt.
Malt, okay. I don't know, water?
Water, yes. Really doing everyone very well.
Thank you, thank you. I'm a enroll in the barrel aged program.
Yeah, then when you throw barrels in there, you kind of throw a fifth ingredient in because it depends on what kind of barrel, what kind of wood, where in the world it's from, how they age the wood to make the barrels. It's a whole new monster in a way. It's pretty cool.
Excellent. Well, this has been fantastic. My sample is gone.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed it. So I would encourage everybody to come and check it out. Check out the brewing company out at the, not the depot.
Out at Lemon Creek, the main brewery at the tasting room. And, starts at 11 on Saturday, goes to 7. It's part of Douglas Days and the celebration of Treadwell Mine and Treadwell Days. And we're hoping everyone comes out and enjoys their samples. Remember to mention Douglas
Magic
Days
Douglas
or
Days.
Treadwell when you come in.
I've got Treadwell Days.
Yes,
for
sure. Yes.
Okay. Write those down, everybody.
<We'll accept it.
laughs> Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there. Later, Pablo Bank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Let us gay and nature sure the public air production will be second to none. And of course, carry the horse down in the wall. And Somerset he'll undertake on solid ground. It means some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight Mr. Kite is coming to bill. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my next guest, Brandon Howard, representing Amalga Distillery. Actually, you're the co-owner.
I am.
Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hey, thank you.
We've gone from beer to cocktails.
Yes.
Now, I ask all my guests this, do you have a favorite mixed drink?
Ooh, I've got a couple of favorite mixed drinks. I love a Sazerac.
Me too.
That's one of my favorites. Drink called The Last Word. It's beautiful. It's lovely. And Negroni's, always wonderful.
I don't know that one. What did you say?
Negroni.
Negroni.
Yeah, and I think next week is Negroni week or something like that. I don't know. There's, a different day or week for everything, but it's Campari and sweet vermouth and gin.
Cool. So for those who may not know yet, what is Amalga Distillery?
We are a new craft distillery here in Juneau. We make spirits, so single malt whiskey we're going to start making here in June, which is basically just beer that's been distilled, which we're really excited about. We're making gin, and we're also going to be doing some vodkas flavored with local ingredients, so spruce tip and rhubarb and things along those lines.
No, you can get on the show a little sooner if you bring samples like the brewery did.
Yeah, no, I'm sitting here drinking a bourbon barrel aged stout. I feel spoiled.
So do I.
I timed it just right.
I know. I love drinking beer at work. Amalga Distillery just has this, I've been in a couple times, it has an especially beautiful artistic look from, associated with the brand, from the interior space to the merchandise to the presentation of the drinks. How did you achieve all that?
Oh, man. I've got to thank the crew that I worked with on it. SK Construction, Steve Klinger, he was our general contractor, and the guy's just brilliant, and their whole crew is amazing. I just can't believe what a great experience it was working with them as a contractor. And so the whole team that they assembled, from our mechanical, like our plumber, Pleasance Plumbing, he was an artist with the plumbing in the space. It's amazing. Alaska Electric, they did just beautiful work. And so the whole space came together because we had this team that, I could come up with an idea or have a vision for something, and they could implement it, which was incredible. It was just a really, really wonderful, wonderful experience. We had some architects with Artillier Corbeau who helped us lay a good solid groundwork to kind of move from. And then it was exciting for me because I have an arts background and I got to play with the space as if it were an art piece in and of itself. So, we wanted to be really respectful of the materials too. So that's why we have this concrete bar and this all concrete building and some local lumber from IC Straight Lumber. Yeah, it was a labor of love. The space is just gorgeous.
It really is. Even I was there in the evening on a beautiful sunny day, and the light just streams in. It's you wouldn't expect it from being on a corner downtown. It's almost as if by design.
Oh yeah, that evening light's gorgeous.
Yeah. So what's happening at Amalga this first Friday?
So this first Friday we are so excited. At Amalga we're going to be doing pop-up shows. My job previous to this was as the artistic coordinator at the Canvas, and I got
to
organize.
Your friends were here earlier.
Yeah, I got to organize First Fridays. It was something that I loved. And so at the distillery, we're going to be doing pop-up shows for First Friday. So they're going to run Friday, Saturday, and then culminate on Sunday with a Bloody Mary. We'll pop in one last look at the show before it comes in or it comes down Sunday afternoon. And this first Friday, we have one of my very favorite artists in town. His name is Chris Taylor, and his paintings and drawings are just the epitome of just dynamism, and they've got so much action and movement and layers, and they're spectacular. And he works in a really large format, especially on his paintings, and so he's going to be showing some of his paintings and a collection of his drawings as well. Standard first Friday hours. We'll be opening the doors at 4 p.m. Until 8 p.m. And so we're going to be showing his work. And in collaboration, our first Fridays are also going to be a fundraiser for Trail Mix, an organization in town that we really love, you know, we have this tagline, a spirit most adventurous, and Juneau's trails are, you know, that's our access point to these experiences and adventures.
It's just a natural melding.
Yeah, so all of the tips that evening will be going to Trail Mix, and Chris Taylor will be there showing his artwork. We've got cocktails, and you can come in and try our new batch of gin, which we're really in love with. It turned out beautifully.
Fantastic. So what are the distillery's regular hours and location as well, in case folks don't know?
Yeah, so we're right next door to Foggy Mountain Shop. We've got the best neighbors in the world.
They are pretty cool.
They are. They're awesome, and they were so patient with us throughout the build-out.
Bless them.
Yeah, a lot of gratitude. And so right across the street from the Baranoff, we're open Monday through Saturday right now from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m., and we have to it's a state law. We have to be cleared out by 8 p.m., which we're fine because we all like to go to bed early. but we've got our gin there right now to sample. In another month or so, we'll also have some of those vodkas. And then to showcase what you can do with our gin, because we're really excited about it, we also have a very highly rotating cocktail menu, and all of our cocktails are on draft. So it's, I think, throws some people off. You know, every single cocktail, it's pulling on a tap handle for it.
Interesting.
But we make our own tonic for our gin and tonics, so our tonic is made in-house. And today I've actually got this, like, grapefruit tonic on that's really nice. We make our own ginger beer for Moscow Mules, and then we just rotate through on the other tap handles, so you kind of never know what you're going to get when you come in.
Again, you guys, Amalgam continuously surprises me with your uniqueness and things I've never seen before, so good job.
Thank you. Well, you know, we're all having so much fun, you know, like, you're called a craft distillery. We feel this responsibility to uphold this idea of craft, and, you know, so for that reason, we like getting to make all of these things ourselves. We have this cocktail on draft right now called the Novara, which is just gorgeous, and it has this obscure passion fruit liqueur that our employee Amon found from Hawaii, and you can only get it from this one little source in Hawaii. And so we have it on for a couple of days just because we wanted to share it with Juno. It's something unique and odd and fun that you probably won't see very often. But, you know, we want to be experimental and
it's a good place to do it.
Yeah, and kind of put something new and unique out there.
Well, I appreciate it. And thank you very much for being on the show today.
Yeah, so thanks for having me.
See you Friday, if not sooner.
Yes, please come out. Chris's work is incredible.
Okay, thanks again, Brandon.
Thank you.
This has been a Juneau Afternoon. My guests were, find that list, from Canvas, Glow, Toby, and Alex, Pat McClear, Brandon Howard, Andy Klein, and Blake Haas, and Jenny Fremlin. We featured music by The Beatles. Happy 50th year anniversary to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. We heard some remixed versions of Fixing a Hole and Getting Better, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, and here are some instrumentals from Guitar Tribute Players. On tomorrow's show, Joan Pardis host, we'll feature Eric Scott, director of campus life from UAS, and get ready for Saturday's Family Fishing Day. We'll hear about Perseverance Theater's STAR program and get our appetites ready for the Northern Lights Lunch program. Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. This has been a Juneau Afternoon. Jeff Brown is producer. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Have a great Juneau evening.
Broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K276AF.